You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me, as always, Rob Rang. Happy Thursday to all of our listeners. Some pretty big news for us to discuss here on today's show. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Back in December, the NFC West came down to 1 inch between the Seahawks and 49ers. Now, these bitter rivals may be engaged in a little different type of battle just a few weeks before the start of the regular season. Rob, you and I both spoke with league sources today. In my case, I spoke with a couple sources about this. Seattle and San Francisco have both had preliminary discussions with the New York Jets about disgruntled star safety Jamal Adams.
Yeah, exactly. And I have reached out to sources just to gauge whether the Seahawks' interest that was reported first by 710 AM's Jay Keeps. And then you confirmed yourself, Corbin, that Seattle as well as the San Francisco 49ers have interest in the star player. And I reached out to the sources of my own and, very quickly after reaching out, got the confirmation that the Seahawks are indeed among the teams who have inquired about Jamal Adams. That's just, it's kind of as expected. We know that certainly since John Schneider has been brought in, that the Seahawks have talked so much about just their willingness to basically explore every single opportunity, and they are in this case. And it's easy to understand why. While we've talked about that the safety position is historically been one of Seattle's strongest and continues to be one of the stronger positions in the team, at least in my opinion. With Jamal Adams, Corbin, as you well know, we're talking about an absolute superstar. And so any opportunity you can bring in a superstar, especially when you are as competitive as the Seahawks are and are competing for playoff spots year in and year out, you have to exhaust those opportunities.
One of my sources said that he did not think that this was a case where the Seahawks were just trying to drive up the price for their rivals either, speaking about the 49ers. So from what he was telling me, this looks like this is genuine interest, not just trying to pick around a little bit and, maybe we'll see if this is something we can do, that the Seahawks are legitimately interested in trying to make this happen. Now, obviously, the price tag is going to be very steep to pull off this trade because we're talking about a player that since entering the league as a high first-round pick, back in 2017, he's produced 273 tackles, 2 interceptions, 2 defensive touchdowns, 25 passes defensed, and he also has 12 sacks in 3 years, one of the best blitzing safeties that I have seen in a long, long time. He is a true Swiss Army knife that can do a little bit of everything. He can play both safety positions, and he's not going to be 25 years old until October, so he's really just entering the prime of his career, coming off of his first-team All-Pro selection last year.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm happy that you mentioned the positional versatility, because that's the thing. When, Jamal Adams came out of LSU, then one of the things that you saw was just the physicality. And at 6 foot, 215 pounds, he has that size to be that box safety. But then when he ran in the low 4.3s to low 4.4s, depending on whose clocks you trust the most, that absolutely proved that he has that elite athleticism that you need to be that single high safety as well. And when you use your safeties as interchangeably as Seattle has done here in recent years, then to have a player who has that type of versatility, certainly would add to Seattle's flexibility on defense. And I think that's something that we've talked about, that is something that the Seattle needs to do, frankly, because they don't have the difference makers on the defensive line. There's another way to address that, and that is to get better in the secondary.
And looking back at what Adam Schefter reported last month when it became apparent that Adams was going to demand a trade, he gave out a list of 7 teams that were preferred trade destinations for Adams. The Seahawks and 49ers were both on that list. And then he later reported that Adams may be willing to go to those teams without signing an immediate extension. And that's a huge deal when you're looking at the salary cap and trying to pull off this trade, especially when you're probably going to have to give up at least a first and a second round pick to make this trade happen. You're going to have to give up some high picks to get the Jets to be able to get rid of their star safety. But I think when you look at his contract the next couple of years, the fact that he may not require an extension right away in the Seahawks case is a really big deal, because his cap hits the next 2 years. The Jets picked up his fifth year option, so you've got him under contract for two more years. His first year, 2020, he's got a cap hit just a little over $7 million, which for his talents is pretty affordable, and then $9.86 million in 2021. Again, that's pretty affordable for a player of this talent. I would expect an extension would have to be done before he went into that fifth season, but there is a little bit more flexibility here, and the Seahawks have a lot more cap space next season what the 49ers do. They also don't have George Kittle heading towards free agency as well. The 49ers have some really big fish in their own team that they're going to have to try to re-sign here. So I think of the two teams here, based on the discussions I had with sources today, Seattle is better positioned if they want to make that run. It's just going to come down to, is John Schneider willing to give up the draft picks that it's going to take to pull this off?
Well, and that's the great question. When I reached out to the source, that was one of the questions I asked. What was that? Basically, what type of compensation are the Jets looking for? Now that's something that no one's going to be willing to give you that honest answer right at this point. But I think that the conversation is going to start at two first-round picks. And I certainly think that that's a lot for a safety. But as we talked about before, I think that this is a spectacular player. I don't know that the Seahawks are going to be willing to do that. I think that for the Seahawks specifically, we might be looking for some type of a trading of a player as well as a draft pick. But again, I think that you are starting the conversation with the 2021 first round draft selection, and that just may be too much. But I would agree with your point, Corbin, as far as the salary cap flexibility, at least in comparison to the 49ers. Of course, there's a lot of other teams out there who have some big needs at the safety position, and I would agree with you that because the fact that Jamal Adams, at least has been reported that he is not necessarily looking for that contract extension right now, that does make this a lot easier possibility to trade. And when you have a relatively inexperienced general manager in Joe Douglas, a good one in my opinion with the New York Jets, but still relatively inexperienced, I think that any grease you can have to the process, and that Jamal Adams contract does allow you that, I think that just makes it that much easier.
It's a lot easier to give up draft picks like that are really high picks when you know I've got this guy under contract for two seasons and I've got some time. I don't have to rush into giving a contract. And because the Seahawks have consistently won and they've consistently been in the playoffs, if you look at the list that was given out to Adam Schefter with seven teams, they were all teams that made the playoffs last year. So he wants to play for a winner. He'll be willing to wait out the extension if he's playing for a team that wins football games. The Jets have not been able to do that, and they haven't been willing to negotiate. Those negotiations have stalled out. So that's why he is so frustrated right now, and he wants a change of scenery. Certainly, there would be some dominoes that need to fall for the Seahawks to do this. They have to be willing to give up those draft picks. And then, of course, you've got three really solid safeties on the roster. But I think if they make this trade immediately, Bradley McDougal is either going to be shipped somewhere else via trade, or they're just going to release him, because you're going to get around $4 million in cap relief if you make that move. And again, the cap hit of $7 million for Adams is something that they'll be able to absorb this year. It's not like this is a guy that's carrying a $17 million cap hit or something. He's pretty darn affordable, at least under his current contract. And then when you get the extension, it's going to be a little more pricey. But John Schneider has shown in the past he's more willing to pay elite secondary players than pass rushers. It seems like he and Pete Carroll feel like we can build the pass rush up with players that aren't quite as expensive. We want the marquee guys in our secondary. And so that's another reason I was not surprised to hear that the Seahawks are seriously looking at this. We'll have to wait and see what happens. Only a few weeks until training camp is scheduled. The coronavirus situation, we don't know how all this is going to play out, but certainly the Seahawks are looking at possibly upgrading that secondary, and really, quite frankly, trying to keep him out of the 49ers' hands as well. This really could be something that turns the tide for whoever can win the NFC West. If one of these teams trades for Jamal Adams, that could be a huge difference maker trying to win this very difficult division. When we come back in the second quarter, we're going to start breaking down position groups for training camp, since we are now 3 weeks away from when it's scheduled to start. We're going to look at the running back position in the second quarter. Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde and company. Don't go away. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the same parts? RockAuto.com's prices are the same for everybody and are reliably low. RockAuto.com always offers the lowest prices possible rather than changing prices based on what the market will bear like airlines do. They have everything from engine control modules and brake parts to tail lamps, motor oil, and even new carpet. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in a few easy clicks delivered directly to your door. The RockAuto.com catalog is unique, remarkably easy to navigate, and all the parts are available for your vehicle. Choose the brand, specifications, and prices you prefer. Go to RockAuto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "locked in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. RockAuto.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, along with Rob Rang. Training camp just around the corner. Obviously, a much different circumstance than usual, Rob. In a normal year, we'd be saying it's absolutely going to start in less than 3 weeks. But your guess is as good as mine whether this training camp is actually going to start on time with all the beefs that we're seeing between the league and the Players Association so far about player safety and a number of different issues. There's still a lot of things that need to be sorted out, but we are pushing forward just like the league, believing training camp is going to be starting here in the next few weeks. So we're going to start breaking down position groups. It's time to look at the running back position here first. And obviously this is a position that the Seahawks know who the starter is going to be. Chris Carson coming back from a cracked hip. I just watched a couple more video clips. He's moving really well. Looks like he's going to be ready to go for the start of training camp. And quite honestly, Rob, he has been one of the top 10 running backs in football the last 2 years. So expectations are going to be really high once again going into the final year of his contract.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing, is that it is the final year of his contract. So while there might be some people who have some serious kind of concerns about, competing this year, given everything that's going on, I would think that Chris Carson is going to be one of those players who is just jumping at the bit to be able to get back onto the field. Now, you mentioned, of course, coming off of the injury, but at the same time, he has proven to be every bit the workhorse that the Seahawks could have, had been looking for ever since the retirement the departure of Marshawn Lynch. Of course, the back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons and made such great improvement as a receiver and as a pass blocker as well. Last year, his second season as Seattle's full-time starter. And I think that the only thing you have to really be concerned about with Chris Carson is we know that he had some struggles with fumbles. And then he had some struggles, of course, with durability. If he can fix those two things, I think that he is absolutely the type of young player that you'd like to build around. At the same time, we talked about this a lot before, that if you are going to struggle with the idea of allocating early draft picks to a running back, then I really think that a lot of folks are going to struggle with the idea of paying a running back, especially one who has already been beaten up as much as Chris Carson. But for my money, with the obvious exception of Russell Wilson, Chris Carson has been Seattle's most reliable star player on either side of the ball, other than Russell Wilson and then Bobby Wagner of the last couple of years.
And I think the thing that needs to be pointed out with Carson, because I was seeing today, I think it was the Get Up show on ESPN. They had their top 10 running backs and they pulled a bunch of executives, and Carson was not on that top 10 list. But if you look at the stats over the past 2 years of the running backs with 450 or more carries, there's been 10 of them that qualify, and he ranks sixth among that group in rushing yards. He's got 18 total touchdowns, 4.5 yards per carry during that span. He has, 57 receptions the last two seasons as well. So he ranks in the middle of the pack as a receiver, which in Seattle's offense is pretty impressive for the running back position, with an 80% catch rate. So when he does have the ball thrown to him, he's very reliable, has sure hands. The only thing on there that was, as you mentioned, a bit of an issue, he ranked first among those 10 players in fumbles. He had 10. Ezekiel Elliott had 9 just behind him. So the ball security issues obviously have been a big problem for him. But as far as consistent production, he's been as good as any running back in football, especially running between the tackles. And he's going to get a chance to further pad those stats and join elite company, become the sixth all-time to have 3 straight 1,000-yard seasons. Now, behind him, a little different scenario now. The biggest reserve now going into this offseason, it looked like he was probably going to be Travis Homer or maybe even rookie DJ Dallas, who was drafted in April. But Then the Seahawks in early May signed Carlos Hyde, who is coming off the first 1,000-yard season of his career.
Yeah, exactly. And I think Carlos Hyde is kind of a sneaky signing by the Seahawks because, you know, it's one of those guys, I think that sometimes the fantasy football enthusiasts out there, you know, who don't like a big back like Carlos Hyde. And even though, as you mentioned, that he is coming off his first 1,000-yard season of his NFL career, which doesn't really give him credit. I mean, he had a couple of years where he was well over 900 yards with the 49ers. You know, so this is a talented back, and he plays Seahawks style of football. Now, there's a lot of fans out there who don't like the Seahawks style of football, Corbin. Again, as you well know, yep. but he is a physical back. He can be between the tackles and be that bell cow should Chris Carson have some issues. Obviously, you had some concerns with Rashad Penny coming off of his injuries. I just like to see how protected themselves here because this is not a rookie. This is a pro who knows how to play the game. And so you know that Chris Carson is your star, but at the same time, you have to protect yourself in case stuff happens. And if that's the case, then Carlos Hyde can give you that bell cow back that you need for this offense to run as effectively as it needs to.
They're learning from the end of the season last year when that running back unit became a mash unit in the last month of the season. When you lose Penny, then Carson goes down, Prosise goes down, and they were stuck with just Travis Homer, who I believe is the favorite to win the third down back position. Now, his former college teammate, DJ Dallas, was a receiver going into college, and so he could play that role really well as well. But I think Travis Homer, with the fact we haven't had OTAs and minicamps, and really he played admirably at the end of the season last year. That game against the 49ers, he had over 90 all-purpose yards in that game, 62 rushing yards on 10 attempts, 5 receptions. And what really jumped out to me, and I've talked about this time and time again, being a former running back and a running back coach, I value pass protection for my backs just as much as the ability to run the football and catch the football. And this kid is elite in that area of his game. He had a couple really cool blocks in that game. One of them was on Nick Bosa, and he stonewalled him. You just don't see 200-pound running backs do that, but he's so technically sound. He just does a great job in that part of his game. And so I think it's his job to lose. DJ Dallas has a lot of upside, but Homer showed a lot in that third down capacity late last year, and I think he's going to be a guy that gives him a nice change of pace back to Chris Carson and Carlos Hyde.
Yeah, I agree. I think we're talking about two really good backs here. You said it well with Travis Homer, especially the pass protection. I mean, just his technique and his toughness. I mean, for a guy who's 205 pounds, he plays like he's 230. He plays like he's built like a Carlos Hyde or Chris Carson, just his physicality. And then the soft hands out of the backfield. And Dallas, as you mentioned, is a former wide receiver, also has that. And for a guy who's 5'10", 220 pounds, he's got kind of a short, squatty build. But he's got a lot better lateral agility than he looks. It's kind of funny. These two former Miami backs, former teammates, of course, it's funny that Homer plays bigger than he looks, and Dallas plays smaller than he looks. And so I think that between the two of them,
so they're perfect Seahawks is what you're saying.
Exactly. And I think either way that they're the kind of guys that can be that complementary threat for you. And so I think that it's a very clear delineation between who your starter is, who your primary backup is. And I agree with you. I think the two former Miami teammates are going to be fighting and scratching to see who's going to be Seattle's primary number three back.
And both those guys are going to be in the mix on special teams as well. Travis Homer got a few reps returning kicks last season, and DJ Dallas was an explosive punt returner at Miami. So they're going to find their ways to impact games, even if they're not playing a ton of snaps in the backfield. And really the real wild card here, when we're talking the running back position, we saw what Rashad Penny was doing the couple games before. Unfortunately, he blew out his knee. Career-high 129 rushing yards and a win over the Eagles, over 100 all-purpose yards and 2 touchdowns against a very good Vikings defense the following week, was really starting to figure things out and show why the Seahawks picked him in the first round a couple years ago, then unfortunately gets hurt. Right now, I don't expect that we're going to see him till at least the midway point of the season. I think he starts the year on the PUP list, but if they're able to get him back at 100%, and they don't rush him back, which Pete Carroll's made it clear they're not going to. We know the elite burst he has gives him an element that no other running back on this team has. And if you are able to have him, Carlos Hyde, and Chris Carson all healthy for the final stretch run, that is going to be arguably the best backfield in the entire NFL.
It could be. I'm really interested to see what happens with Rashad Penny. His talent is through the roof. Like you, Corbin, I was very, very high on Rashad Penny coming out of San Diego State. I really applauded Seattle's selection of him. I thought that he is a perfect fit for their system, and thought that every time that we've seen those flashes, that I really think that he can be a spectacular back. But as we talked about before, this is a guy that, it never has had the elite quickness. He develops his speed well for a big guy, and once he's gliding, he's gone, kind of a guy. But, that ACL tear is a significant injury. There's a guy that has not had injury issues in the past, and I hope that he is giving this everything that he possibly has. And even if he does, there's obviously backs that never come back from these types of injuries. So I think that Seattle was very wise to protect themselves with a player like Carlos Hyde, as well as drafting a back in DJ Dallas. And then I'm intrigued by some of the undrafted free agent kind of guys that they have. This Patrick Carr is a good player. He's a short, squatty guy, but I think that he has interesting ability as well. And then how do you not love the story that is Anthony Jones from FIU? He's another one of those kind of guys I think that could surprise people if he's given an opportunity.
Anthony Jones is the kind of player that you just don't doubt. When you see what he did, he was shot in the face and he played in a football game 7 weeks later. I mean, that takes a different level of toughness to be able to overcome that. And he ended up finishing his career as the lead rusher for the Golden Panthers. And with what we saw last year, I absolutely think they're going to be keeping at least one running back on their practice squad just to make sure they have insurance. And if we have any preseason games, we don't know how this is going to play out over the next month. But we'll get a chance to maybe see both those guys, Carr and Jones, on the field. And they both fit what Seattle's looking for, physical running backs with shorter, stockier builds, and they're guys that maybe could develop into potential guys that are on your roster down the road. So I do like the depth that they've got at this position a lot, and they needed to do that after the way last year ended. When we come back in the third quarter, we're going to flip to defense into the secondary, and we're going to look at the cornerback position for the Seahawks. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rod Rang. Happy Thursday to all of our listeners. It's time to talk cornerbacks now. We just looked at the running back position. We're going back to the secondary here. And the Seahawks, arguably the biggest move that they made this entire offseason in March, was trading a fifth-round pick to the Washington Redskins in order to acquire Quentin Dunbar, the standout cornerback. And at the time, that looked like an absolute steal. But as we talked about again a couple episodes ago, Dunbar is still dealing with some legal issues relating to armed robbery charges, and it doesn't look like there's any end in near sight. The Seahawks have a little bit of uncertainty now at this position. It's very likely that we could open training camp without Dunbar in Seattle, and that could mean Trey Flowers is back in the starting lineup, at least for the short term.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why I think the cornerback is easily Seattle's biggest position of concern at this point. Now, again, if you have Quentin Dunbar, then you're rocking and rolling. But let's just imagine for a moment that you do have Quentin Dunbar, then still you have Shaquille Griffin, you have Trey Flowers, you have Quentin Dunbar. And then if you want to say Nico Thorpe, who obviously has been a big-time player for the Seahawks, but mostly on special teams. But other than that, you have Brian Allen, Ryan Neal, Lyndon Stevens, Gavin Heslop, De'Veon Renfro, and Kamara Severin, the last three of which are undrafted free agent rookies. There's not a lot of familiarity here. And we've talked so much about the offensive line and how that takes some time to develop. Well, that kickstep, the Pete Carroll preaches is something that takes some time as well. And so I do have some concerns for the Seahawks in that regard. Now, again, if Dunbar is available to you, I think that this is a pretty strong group, especially because the safety group is pretty solid as well. But if you remove Dunbar, then I think that it's kind of the opposite of the running back position. As you mentioned a moment ago, we think that the running back position for the Seahawks might be one of the absolute best in the entire NFC. see, and I would agree with that. But I think on the flip side, if you remove Quentin Dunbar, then you're talking about a cornerback position with a guy who's entering his free agent year in Shaquille Griffin that is arguably one of the worst in the NFC. And that's obviously a huge concern given the quarterback talent that you have in this division.
If you've got Dunbar in the equation and you have him and Griffin on the outside and you can use Ugo Amadi as your primary nickel, and then you could use Trey Flowers in the big nickel with his past safety experience, he could probably handle that role, or even Dunbar himself. Dunbar has played a little bit in the slot before. You have a lot more flexibility and you have a lot more depth. If Trey Flowers is your number three corner, that's a very good third corner that has started a bunch of games the last 2 years. But when they traded for Dunbar, that had a domino effect on the rest of the offseason. They didn't draft any other corners for the secondary. They didn't sign anybody in free agency. That was the one move that they made to upgrade this unit. So if he's not there, you have the same exact cast of characters that you had last season, with Griffin and Flowers being the starters, Amadi probably being your primary nickel, and then Nico Thorpe, if he can stay healthy. He's had some injury issues the last couple of years. He's your emergency guy behind them that can play a little bit slot. He can play a little bit on the outside. But as you said, there's a lot of unfamiliarity after that. Ryan Neal and Brian Allen have played in NFL games before, but they've never played defense. They've always been special teams guys when they've gotten opportunities. Lynn Stevens played in three games for the Dolphins last year, has never played in any other games in the NFL, and he's too small to play on the outside, so he's a slot guy. And then undrafted rookies are going to take a lot of time, especially without OTAs and minicamps, to be able to get them ready to play on Sundays if they're ever able to. And so you're right. If you take Dunbar out of the equation, it dramatically changes this group. I don't know that there's a position group on this roster where you pull a player that was signed or traded for in free agency out of the equation and it changes things so drastically just because they didn't make any other moves here.
Yeah, exactly. And so that's where I think that there is reason to be concerned. And that said, this is a team that has had remarkable success at finding these long arm corners and just having them fit into their scheme. I mean, it just, you know, guy after guy after guy. And everybody, of course, is going to focus in on players like Richard Sherman. And if you're looking for a guy like a Richard Sherman, then Brian Allen, who was drafted in the fifth round by the Pittsburgh Steelers out of Utah, and we know the Seahawks love their Utah players. Brian Allen was a former wide receiver, 6'3", 200 pounds, and ran the 4.4s and had a three-cone drill in the 6.6s, which is fantastic for a big, tall guy like that. So he's a really intriguing athlete. He's just raw as all heck, you know. So he does have that type of potential. He's one of the guys that intrigues me of the so-called new guys for the Seahawks, and he does have that size for the outside. And then you mentioned Quentin Dunbar and his positional versatility. He has played some slot in the past. I'd be surprised if he played that for the Seahawks. We've talked a little bit about how Shaquille Griffin is your best athlete at that spot. So I don't know that the Seahawks want to do that and ask him to move inside, but he is a dynamic athlete. Ugo Amadi is a dynamic athlete as well. Those, to me, are the guys that you're looking for at that nickel spot. Heslop, if we're, you know me, I'm always going to kind of be looking at some of these the young players, the undrafted guys. Heslop is the one who kind of struck me as being a playmaker. He does have the length, 32-inch arms, even though he's a six-footer. So he's the guy that I think if you're looking for someone who's kind of come out of the woodwork, then he might be the one to watch.
Yeah, he's the undrafted free agent of that group of three players that I think has the most upside. He didn't have any interceptions in college, but I also think part of it is teams just didn't throw very much. I mean, he was head and shoulders above a lot of the other corners that you're going to find playing at the FCS level. And so teams didn't target him a lot, and he got a lot of pass deflections when they did. And so he's able to get his hands on the football. He's got the length. He's athletic. He brings some leadership intangibles to the table as well. I believe he was a captain at Stony Brook. And so those are the kind of guys that the Seahawks like to bring in as undrafted free agents. You mentioned Brian Allen. To me, I actually think Ryan Neal might be the wild card for me in this secondary. And I've talked a bunch about Lynn Stevens as well, just because he did play in three games for the Dolphins last year. John Schneider and Pete Carroll both name dropped him after the draft as somebody to compete with Ugo Amadi in the slot. I still think that's Amadi's job. but Stevens might be the one guy that can make a run there. But Ryan Neal is a guy with his size, being another one of those players in the 6'3 range, around 200 pounds, has played safety. He's played some corner. And the advantage that he and Allen are both going to have here is they spent most of last year on Seattle's practice squad. So they've already had time to work with that kick step and learn this scheme. And these undrafted guys have not had a chance to do that, at least on the field. And so that's going to be a huge advantage for those veterans. I think Ryan Neal, after playing in a few games on special teams last year, is definitely a player to watch. But really, this one, I mean, we can't say this about most positional groups. We talked about Penny being the wild card at running back as he's coming back from injury. Quentin Dunbar really is the wild card here that is going to impact this group in the secondary. What happens with his legal proceedings? If he's able to play at the beginning of the season, could he be suspended? I mean, we don't know how any of this is going to play out because we don't even know when the next legal proceeding is going to be in that case. It hasn't been scheduled as of this point, and COVID's kind of slow played all of that. So lots of uncertainty for a player the Seahawks were very fired up to trade for, and they're hoping he will be available when the season starts in September. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor for the Locked On Seahawks podcast, you can contact us, lockseahawks@gmail.com. You can subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you listen to your podcast by going to our website, lockedonseahawks.com. Coming up on our Friday show, going to be looking at the wide receiver position as well as defensive tackle. Looking forward to continue breaking down all of the positional groups heading towards Seahawks training camp. Enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Go Hawks.